Special coverage from the New Orleans Investment Conference is brought to you by Victoria Gold Corp, leading UConn's new gold rush.
Welcome back to SOAR Financially. Welcome back to the New Orleans Investment Conference. I'm joined by Danielle DiMartino Booth, CEO and Chief Strategist of QI Research. Danielle, I've been looking forward to this interview for ages, I have to admit.
Thank you. Like,
we've been trying to coordinate something forever.
We finally made it happen.
Finally. It's one of the reasons I came to New Orleans, I have to admit. So
awesome.
Let's make it worth it. It'll be fun. Why don't we start with the state of the economy overall? Mm-hmm. A bit of a general question, like how are we doing? And then we'll dive a bit more into some of the topics you'll be presenting here as well.
So, you know, I think it's very timely that we just came through the October jobs data, and that shows that we've seen a half percentage rise off the bottom in the unemployment rate. And typically when you're at that junction, at least historically speaking, you're already in recession. So if I had to guess, I would say recessions probably started September, October of this year.
Interesting, because a lot of commentators say, well, next year, April, May, might be the official timing, but if you look back, it's...
Well, I mean, that's a convenient narrative to have if you're trying to have your investors stay long the stock market.
Good point. Probably averting a crisis here as well.
Because
the market seems quite nervous. Whenever there's data coming out, the volatility is quite high.
There is higher volatility because we finally got volatility in the data itself.
Yeah.
So the data are finally... You've exhausted so many forms of fiscal stimulus at this point that the data don't have really a choice but to begin to reflect the reality of recession and the fact that without further fiscal spending, the U.S. consumer is going to be tapped out. And in fact, not tapped out, not just tapped out. They really have used their credit cards to support spending in the past few months, and those lending standards are tightening, and that's why you're starting to see here so many companies in the current earnings season are saying we don't have pricing power.
Interesting. It's like interesting statements. The CEO of Target was on CNBC this
right.
week. I think you might have retweeted it actually as well.
I did.
And he said, well, people are spending less on food.
And we're seeing the incredible phenomena that we're seeing in the consumption data is that on a unit basis, American families are buying less food. This is not trading down from filet mignon to chicken.
Yeah.
This is Americans actually buying less food. So we really haven't seen a phenomena like this since the 1970s. And it's a sad reflection on how constrained so many U.S. household budgets are.
Yeah. And we can rule out the weight loss drugs.
Yes, I think that's safe.
Okay. I'm seeing some interesting statistics.
They're going to have very real effects. I mean, if you say, you know, fewer Krispy Kremes, I say, of course, because there's not as many cravings for really bad things.
Yeah.
But that's not been the driving force.
Yeah. No, one number that jumped out, just the last comment on that, is that United can save $80 million a year just because of that.
Like, absolutely, on fuel costs.
Yeah. Really interesting comment. Like, really curious where that goes. You said recession started already in September.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned jobs report, looking at that, but what are some of the other indicators that you're using to make that statement?
So to take one example, you know, you just had a 6-week strike with United Auto Workers, and yet what we saw come out in the data just a few days ago was that day supply increased despite a strike that's been going on for 6 weeks. What does that tell you? It tells you that the demand for vehicles is coming down. And that we're not going to have that inflationary impulse in one of the biggest ticket items for American families. And of course, lending standards are tightening up for auto loans. Auto loan interest rates are extremely high. And so we're seeing a lot of this manifest in the form of slowing consumption. Consumption matters. It's 70% of the U.S. economy. And when you have people spending less on food, they're certainly not going to be spending on discretionary purchases. And in fact, what we're seeing now is we're seeing disinflation in goods turn into deflation in goods because people simply don't have the extra money to buy what they want. They have to spend everything they have on what they need.
Consumption was a big part of the GDP growth as well.
It was.
That was one of the reasons.
Absolutely.
4.9%. Like, how real is that number? I have to admit, when I saw it, I was scratching my head a little bit.
So about half of that was consumption, but we have to bear in mind some of the work that we've done at QI Research has been on the employee retention credit. And the employee retention credit pumped $474 billion into the U.S. economy in cash starting in July 2020 when the program was implemented. And in fact, we saw the proceeds from the employee retention credit increase as there were people like Kevin O'Leary and Innovation Taxes starting to advertise it more as being free money. Now the IRS has pulled the plug on that.
Yep.
So you saw proceeds go from $29.8 billion in July to $13 billion in September to $6 billion $13 billion in August, $6 billion in September, and lo and behold, we saw the vestiges of those fiscal stimulus monies in that third quarter GDP report.
Yeah.
But in terms of what's behind it, not much.
GDP versus debt is a big discussion as well. So you need a high GDP number to actually be issuing more debt so you can actually stay pro rata. But like, why is GDP? I still don't get it. Like that GDP number, last quarter it was auto sales.
It was auto sales. And again, right? you kind of had this last hurrah. And if you look and see where the autos were selling, it's a lot of it was luxury. Yeah. So again, you're handing out billions and billions and billions of dollars in cash to individuals who, for them, it's this massive windfall. They're going out there spending it. We saw a similar phenomenon in international travel that was really, really strong. Talk to Delta Airlines now. They say, where are international bookings? They've fallen off a cliff. Again, if Uncle Sam's not handing out money like candy, then you're going to see some arresting of this growth. But a lot of GDP, was also some inventory replenishment. Mm-hmm. There's a funny math, but we actually had negative net exports, unheard of. Why is that? World trade's on its way to contracting for the full year. My mentor, Dr. Lacey Hunt, would tell you, anytime you've ever seen world trade contract for a full year, the U.S. economy's in recession.
Yeah, absolutely. Manufacturing was the biggest loser, actually, on the jobs data as well. Just another indicator.
But there were 30,400 jobs between Mack Trucks and the UAW strike that influenced that number. Yeah. But go back to what we just talked about a few minutes ago, the fact that you're seeing falling demand for cars. The car sales for October missed, and yet you saw day supply jump from 40 to 45.
Yeah.
So that situation is in the process of reversing itself. My point to you, though, is Ford is already starting to offer voluntary buyouts.
Interesting.
The ink's barely dry on the new contract between the United Auto Workers and Ford, but just because you have a big pay increase doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to keep everybody on the payroll. Ask UPS. They've already had to push through some layoffs just in the aftermath of this massive increase in pay. You can only squeeze so much blood from a rock. And if you don't have the money to cover all these pay increases and still sell whatever you're selling, product or service, you're going to end up laying people off.
I interviewed Darius Dale last week, I think, and he said, well, one reason consumption is up because we've seen income growth. It's really simple. Income has been going up, so consumption must be going up. Okay. Do you concur? Like, do you follow that?
We certainly have seen income gains, right? We saw runaway income gains in 2022 with the lowest paid individuals. They were able to command the highest in the form of wages because they were paid to leave the workforce. We're seeing a reversal of that right now. So if you looked at the Atlanta wage tracker after the payroll report came out, of course, income was light.
I think you retweeted that as well. I think I've seen that actually.
So income came in at 0.2% growth. That was lighter than what it was. Much more importantly, your work week declined to 34.3 hours per work, hours before bodies. And that is actually a lower work week than what we had prior to the pandemic.
Yeah.
So you're starting to see the real labor market recession kick in, and with it falling income. So that income wage inflation that was so problematic for employers really is going away, but it's being replaced by a lack of demand for what they're selling. That's an even bigger problem than rising wages.
Absolutely. Let's get to this week's topic, actually, FOMC meeting. Mm-hmm. Big topic this week. Yep. Jerome Powell said nothing happened, kind of boring.
I mean,
right?
It was really boring. it's boring when he's bored, and he was bored at the podium. He was reading his questions. Wah, 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 wah. It was very, but he wanted it to be. He didn't want to make any news. He knew that there wasn't going to be a rate hike. The market had completely priced it out. He's not committing to whether or not there might be another rate hike in the future or not. You know, he had the payroll report in hand when he was at the podium, because certain entities do get non-farm payrolls in advance.
Like he's confirmed that in interviews before.
Yes.
That he gets them sometimes before.
So he knew that the unemployment rate was going to pop up to 3.9%. And he knew it was really safe to convey the idea that there's not another rate hike coming because we're in a recession. Now, he can't say that. And when a reporter asked him pointedly, did you put recession back into your base case? He said, absolutely not. So he will continue to stand behind overly strong job openings data, which is specious and corrupted. He will continue to stand behind any inflation print he can, you know, narrow it down to whatever that services, form of services inflation is, because he wants higher for longer. He wants to continue to shrink the Fed's balance sheet. And he wants any kind of evidence or any kind of backing that he can possibly get his hands on to keep reducing the size of the Fed's balance sheet.
We're seeing the lag effect slowly take effect, but not really yet.
And well, ask WeWork shareholders. I think they've seen the effect.
Yeah. It's segregated, like certain or bifurcated recession. Sure. I don't know. Sure. I've been using bifurcated recession to a degree.
The damage done by higher for longer, the damage done by the rate hikes was manifest in 2023 in commercial real estate. You're going to see that fan out into the corporate bond market in 2024. And that's actually going to subjugate and make it even more expensive to try and get some of these commercial real estate deals done. So, yes, the lag effect is real. But by the same token, it really is kicking in, whether you're talking about household delinquencies. You're seeing 30, 60-day mortgage delinquencies increase now that your forbearance is finally ending, the last of the forbearance programs through the FHA. People are actually having to pay their mortgage for the, I think the numbers between 300,000 and 400,000 Americans are going to have to pay their mortgage for the first time in December since March 2020. But the bills are coming due is my point. And we're seeing that in the delinquency data. We're seeing it in the lag effect play out, whether you're talking about corporate bankruptcies or U.S. household bankruptcies.
Student loan debt repayments is another factor that probably weighs on the consumer there as well. Last question on the Fed. Is the pillow like soft enough? Like, are there enough feathers in the Fed's pillow
to soften
the blow?
Are you really asking me that question?
I have to
ask.
We
just walked through a recession.
No, right? It's like, we're at 5.25, 5.5%. Like, is there enough wiggle room to the downside, meaning on the rate side, that it could soften the blow and actually turn a hard landing into a really soft, cushy landing?
Not before March of 2025, right? Because we have to remember that after the pandemic hit, the Fed was not able to go alone. So they couldn't just reduce interest rates to the zero bound and kick quantitative easing back in. They actually needed an equal amount, an equal weighting of fiscal stimulus. And you're not going to see that come out of this very dysfunctional House of Representatives that took 6 weeks or however long it took to find a speaker. So, but you're not going to see this House of Representatives voting in any kind of fiscal stimulus measures that we saw that hand money to people that could possibly help engineer a soft landing. Just not in the cards.
Okay. Let's talk about your presentation, the most aggressive Fed in modern history. Like, what are some of the key takeaways that you want the investors here to leave with?
So, I mean, I think, you know, everybody always talks, you know, way back in the 1980s when I had a 14% mortgage rate. Starting points matter. And if you look at where interest rates were in the beginning and where they are now, and you look at that change, Powell's been more aggressive than Paul Volcker. And all you need from here is about 4 more months before he will have been higher for longer than Paul Volcker was in the 1980s, which of course, you know, we forget about the double dip recession of 1980, 1981. Before the Great Financial Crisis, that had been the worst recession since the Great Depression. And I think that is the corollary that I draw most often, is not necessarily a parallel between 2007 and where we are now, but more so that double dip recession of the 1980s with a lot more debt than we had back then.
How do investors protect themselves now?
It's easy to protect yourself. They're not being compensated for credit, for taking on credit risk. You can still pile your money into T-bills, get a good dose of gold in there just for good measure. Gold loves recessions. Yeah. And you can afford to be on the sidelines in these kinds of environments. It's a treat. We haven't been paid for, you know, to hold cash. There hasn't been, you know, we haven't been able to teach a generation of children what compound interest is. Now we can. I've got all 4 kids and my retired mother. They're all compounding interest at 5.21%. Fabulous for them. And we can finally teach those lessons. But again, it's been how long since Alan Greenspan took office? August the 12th, 1987? Since 1987, savers have been penalized. Those days are not with us right now. We're actually able to make money on our cash. Not a bad place to be.
Are you worried about bond security, bond maturity security, that you actually get paid back on your bonds? Is there a risk?
I mean, the world could end. But until then, it's still going to be the risk-free rate. I mean, it's still going to be the world's risk-free asset. I mean, it just is. I mean, again, it's sexy to talk about these things and dollar devaluation and what have you. You know, but until Saudi Arabia stops issuing sovereign debt in dollars, I'm really not going to get too damn concerned about whether they're going to pay for a few barrels of oil in yuan.
Okay. Perfect. Danielle, I think let's end it here. It's a fantastic discussion. We can go. I could go on forever with you. We haven't even talked about the debt crisis in general, or the U.S. debt and where that is going.
Until March of 2025, we're not going to see at the margin more fiscal stimulus. And I think that that's what we're running very high deficits. We're running very high levels of debt. But in terms of what have you done for me lately, fresh spending out of the government, not happening until after the election, which is a year from now.
Okay. With a surprise, maybe there are a couple of viewers that don't know how to find you. Where do we find more of you, Danielle?
Come to demartinobooth.substack.com. There's actually a New Orleans Investment Conference, a very, very rare coupon code that we've got running around here. And then follow me on Twitter at demartinobooth.
Fantastic. Danielle, thanks so much for joining me here.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Everybody else, thanks so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this discussion with Danielle. Make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit that like button, and to comment below. What do you think? When is the debt crisis going to hit? Is the jobs report real? What do you think? Put that down below. We do want to hear from you. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much, and we'll be back with more from New Orleans.